Hello and welcome to the Indie Dev Podcast. I'm your host, David Voiles, and with me this week we have developer Neon Deity Games, really Anthony Swinich, who's developer behind Shuchimi, Seriously Swole, which is a randomized shoot 'em up about a muscle-bound fish with memory problems defending the seven seas. But there's a catch, and isn't there always a catch? You've been cursed with an incredibly short attention span, which seems to be the issue that plagues most goldfish. So your job is to combat waves and upgrade cycles, but they only last for 10 seconds apiece. So highly randomized, very fast moving, and all kinds of just wackiness and craziness in this. So Anthony, thank you for joining us.
Hey, no problem. It's great to be here.
Likewise. So it's been a while since we last talked. I haven't had you on this show before, but we have done another show many, many times together, haven't we?
Yeah, this is like a blast from the past for me. It's been quite some time since we did anything podcast related together. So it's really nice to get back to it.
Yeah, we used to do Armless Octopus, which was a podcast and a video game website started probably 5 years ago, where it covered largely started off as Xbox Live indie games. So very small, often questionable titles. And then later on, we started covering PS3 and things like that. Then this generation of consoles, we just kind of abandoned, took a break, and all went different ways. But obviously, we all stayed in touch because you're back, but this time on the other side of the development process, right?
It's really strange to, like, you know, make that jump. I really missed the Xbox Live indie days because you never knew what you were going to get. And now I kind of have to provide that for people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you still have to be somewhat critical of other people, but also critical of your own work, especially now that you're creating something. So can you give us a quick spiel about Shuchimi, like maybe perhaps whatever I already missed at this point? So people who don't know anything about it, how would you explain it to them?
So Shuchimi was a game that was created by myself, Wayne Kubiak, and Garrett Varin. The three of us are Neon Deity Games. And it was born from a game jam in 2013. Okay. And we did it for Ludum Dare. And the theme was 10 seconds. Everything had to last 10 seconds. So we kind of took that and ran with it. So the entire game is built around that idea that everything should last 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And in about a day, we came up with the initial prototype, which is, you know, very similar to the core gameplay that you play in the full version now.
Right.
And we just kind of built it from there.
So it started something
over time,
simple.
We added... Oh, go on.
Let's say you start with something simple and kind of grew from there.
Yeah. So it started out as a simple concept and we had it at a party and then people seemed to enjoy playing it. So we just kept adding stuff to it. So more enemies, more power-ups. We added the multiplayer mode, online leaderboards, all that good stuff.
So was this your first game jam before?
It was our second game jam as a group, and we didn't finish our entry for the first one.
Okay.
So this was kind of it was a big one for us just because we were so proud of with what we came up with.
Right.
And it was cool to kind of see that through all the way to completion.
Yeah, no, I bet. So I mean, for people who hadn't been to a game jam before, say someone wants to get into games, is this a good way to get started or perhaps pique their interest and kind of get an understanding of where to go?
I feel like I'm a little biased in so far as to say like game jams worked for me, but right. I do feel like there's a huge level of there's a lot you can learn from a game jam because you're so time constrained and like maybe not your first game jam or even your second, but as you kind of go through the process of learning, you know, how much can we conceptualize and complete in this amount of time? Because you always get to that point in a game jam where, and we joke about it all the time because now we do game jams pretty regularly and you come up with an idea and you're like, oh, this is going to be so sweet. We're going to get it all done. And then you get to about that point, right about halfway, and you're like, we're never going to get any of this done. And then you just start slashing features out and you kind of try to cobble something together that, you know, in the amount of time you have left.
That's the real world, right? That's making a game.
Absolutely. And you learn a lot about your own time management and how to say something is good enough, finally. And before, you know, when you have a deadline, it has to go, whether you think it's ready or not. So,
right.
It's
just perfection.
Some valuable lessons.
Yeah, I mean, perfection is the enemy of release dates. Right? So many people if I tweak this, tweak that, because you're never really finishing a project. There's always more you can do. You're just saying, this is good enough to get it out the door, and then we'll you know, take the blows as they come.
Exactly. But, and I mean, that's in this in the, like, the modern climate too. It's, you can do that more so with even full releases, with patches and upgrades and content to download, you know, whether it costs money or not. It's a viable strategy now that people have kind of grabbed onto.
Oh yeah, I mean, and just looking at reviews alone, I mean, I'm glancing at the Steam page over here, and people seem to absolutely love this. I mean, going down, I'm trying to see like where you can get the percentage of reviews. 35 reviews overall positive. And there's some very helpful reviews here. But people, I mean, they're putting some time, especially for like a pretty straightforward shmup. 3.5 hours, 4.7 hours, 7.1 hours, 15.2. I mean, some people are really cranking through this game and getting it. And when you think that's only, you know, 10 seconds of gameplay at a time, but boom, 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 moving fast, it's an interesting dynamic.
I feel like when it catches people, it really grabs them. Yeah. It's, if somebody doesn't like it, typically they kind of don't get it. It's not to say that like we made the perfect game in that respect. Sometimes people just don't like your game, and maybe the game's not for everybody. But if someone gets into this game, it usually sinks its claws in pretty deep.
Right. Yeah, and so, you have like a very specific audience in mind.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really target an audience. We just kind of wanted to make a weird WarioWare meets Parodius game in the end, and I think
so.
In that regard, we definitely succeeded.
Can you describe Parodius to people who may not know what this is? There might be a lot of younger people who don't quite know Konami in their golden era.
Sure. So Parodius is a game that Konami made back in their heyday of the 8 and 16-bit days, where they used to make a lot of side-scrolling shooters. And they made a parody version that cobbled together elements from a bunch of their different shooters in like a comedic sense. So they had like the ship from Gradius and the penguin from, man, I think he's from that Penguin Eating game, but I'm not sure if he's even from that. He might be from a different game. Wayne would know that. And it's a bunch of different goofy shooter concepts. So like one level is a carnival and another level is like you're shooting pirate cats. And they're super goofy and very strange, and they never really came to America, but they, you know, through the magic of video game magazines and then later the internet, everybody kind of started to learn about these and then imports, and they're kind of a cult classic now, especially since Konami's not quite what they used to be.
Yeah, they recently said they were departing from AAA after the last Metal Gear Solid game, especially now that Kojima left or really got booted. And now they're going to, I guess, Japanese casino-style games like Pachinko and things like that, which is so far different from what they were known for years ago. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, given their recent output, I'm not super sad about it from that standpoint, because they don't seem to care as much about the old stuff. But I do wish they would license out the properties to companies who would want to make more entries in their old series.
No, I agree. But, you know, one of the things they were definitely known for that their heyday was their soundtracks. So speaking of soundtracks, why don't you discuss a little bit about the Tsushima soundtrack for us?
So I composed the Tsushima soundtrack in Famitracker, which for those who are not aware of that, it's freeware for Windows that you can get that emulates the sound chip in the old Nintendo and Famicom, so the 2A03. Mm-hmm. So you can create tracks in this program and then export them onto an actual Nintendo and play them. So I spent a lot of time trying to write these little 10-second riffs since all the levels are so short. And I think I wrote 20 normal level ones, 6 boss tunes, and a bunch of other goofy ones. There's a title theme. There's all kinds of weird stuff you can do audio-wise in the span of 10 seconds that I didn't ever consider was possible before doing this project.
Yeah, I'm actually playing Famitracker in the background here. So, I mean, when I first saw this thing absolutely blew my mind, because the programmers for the NES had to write all of this themselves. And they were basically writing music for a keyboard and then keeping like programming values down, which they would then enter by hand into the NES itself. And then it output what was called NSF, or Nintendo Sound Format. So this Famitracker, which sound formats does it export for you?
So you can export as an NSF and then dump it right onto a flash cart and it'll play. And it the files are saved as .ftms, but that's just like the file you can edit.
Yep. But I mean, in your case, like for Tsushima, you're essentially exporting either WAV or MP3, right?
Yeah, so I export them as waves, and then I don't really do any audio balancing outside of the actual program. I might boost the audio level to make it a little louder, but that's just the overall track.
And then in terms of like how the game actually came together, what did you guys use? Which tool? Or
Originally,
middleware to write your own?
the first one we made the game in XNA, and then
Okay.
as we moved away from XNA and
And for those who don't know, that's Microsoft's C Sharp gaming framework, which I want to say was like defunct, like they abandoned support for it, but the community
correct.
really took it with Monogame, the open source implementation, ran with it, and now that thing is like had a second set of legs.
Yeah, so and that's I'm happy that happened because I really like what XNA and that framework is, because that's Mono now, right?
Yep. Or Monogame, yes,
Yeah.
Monogame.
So I right around the time we decided we wanted to expand the game and kind of go further with it was right when Microsoft kind of was like, oh, I guess we're done with this. So
Yeah.
we were like, well, I guess abandon ship. What are we going to do? We want to keep making games. So we moved on to Unity, and Garrett moved into Unity. He did like a half step into Unity using something called Feudal, which is a middleware that it's supposed to be like an easy way to transition from XNA to Unity. And
Right.
through the process, he used Feudal, and eventually, as he got better at Feudal and Unity, Feudal started to provide some roadblocks, and now that we're on a newer projects, we're just in Unity proper without Feudal. But Feudal,
Yeah.
I can't say enough good things about it. It got us, through the game.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, like off the ground and running. I'm actually
Exactly.
looking at a Mono Game showcase from 2 months ago. So, I mean, the team is still very active building on this thing. In fact, another PS4 game was announced today. This was Score Rush Extended from Zona Games, and it's going to come out on PS4 at the end of the month, May 31st. It's a top-down, high-intensity shmup where you guys are side-scrolling. And then also about 2 months ago, Ska Studios released Salt and Sanctuary, like another game. It's kind of like a 2D Dark Souls, the best way to describe it. Also done again with Monogame.
That's James Silva, right?
That's right, James Mistrelle Silva.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and the Zona guys are good guys too. I like all of their games, so it's awesome that they're still out there working with that.
Absolutely. So, you had Sashimi, like any lessons learned you'd want to share with people, like looking, knowing what you know now, as you're working on this for a year and a half, 2 years or so, what would you have done differently?
That's a I guess have a post-release content schedule in mind, because when we
Okay.
finished the game, we were done. But I feel like if we had some DLC planned and some stuff to kind of support it afterward, it would have done us a lot better for, updates to kind of grab attention again and pull people back in, maybe grab some more news stories.
Right.
We finished the game and we promoted it, but we didn't have anything left to kind of be like, hey guys, this is happening now. And the game suits itself really well to that. We just weren't we didn't have the foresight to put that together. So
Yeah.
if you're putting a game out now, DLC is almost expected, and you should almost be ready to have like one or two rollouts, major rollouts after release.
Yeah. It's like the software as a service today. And like people are almost using it as DRM as well. Previously DRM, digital rights management, it's a way of locking people out of playing a game if they've acquired it illegally or by some questionable means. But
Sure.
now, I play The Division. And for me to keep playing this, I have to connect to their online servers. They'll have updates every few weeks, and this is how I can play with other people. But if you're playing a single player game, maybe it's a little more work, or you may not have these online servers people can play against all the time. But at least with something like what you're doing, you're essentially offering added value and encouraging people to pay for it, if you're consistently releasing new skin, new weapons, new songs, levels, whatever else. And it seems like there's a lot you could add to this as well, because your game is all over the place. I've got it playing behind me now. And I mean, can you describe some of these power-ups? Right now I'm looking at, it looks like there's lightning and there's a guy flexing his arm, and sharks are
Sure.
coming after me. Like, it could be some of the crazier things that you have in here.
So the lightning one is a pretty cool one, where just for 10 seconds it turns the screen into a thunderstorm, which is pretty cool. And that went through a couple of iterations over the years, where it didn't have the lightning bolt; it was just the flashes. Then we added the clouds. It was a pretty cool transition there. Some you can get weapon upgrades, so you can turn your regular gun into a shotgun or a laser gun, cannonballs. Your fish can become gigantic. which of course increases its hitbox, but it also gives
Right.
you an extra hit like Super Mario Brothers. Maybe I shouldn't name drop that as a reference there, but I think we're safe there.
Yeah, I think people are aware.
There's like 45 hats in the game. Each one has some kind of an effect, whether it's
Yeah.
visual or gameplay. So like one hat may make your shotgun stronger, but
Yep.
another hat may give you a cat on your head that you can throw at your enemies.
Right.
Another hat, I don't know, one looks like the hair from a character in a popular Capcom fighting game, and it goes with
Yeah.
everything.
Okay.
And sometimes you can
So,
get crazy ones where the screen flips upside down.
yeah, notice you get some you get glasses on, and glasses have some kind of effect. The backgrounds are constantly changing. Yeah, so those the epilepsy may not be the best game, but if people want just a bizarre but fun time, I would absolutely recommend this.
Anybody with any kind of visual stimulus problems like that, we put a
Yeah.
mild mode in the options where you can turn
Oh,
off a lot of the
awesome.
flashing. So
That is very smart.
we worked pretty closely with some of the advocates in the field on that and tested it out, and we were pretty cautious about trying to make sure it was good for photosensitive folks.
That's great. So you're really on board with accessibility and trying to make your game appeal to as many people as possible.
I think you have to be worried about that these days, because
Yeah.
it's a real common affliction, and flashing anything, it's dangerous, and you don't want to put somebody in that position.
Right. Yeah, you want people to be comfortable, enjoy your product, and reach as many people as possible. Well, that's
Exactly.
awesome. I just read a great article about Uncharted 4 yesterday where they said they'd given a talk at GDC and somebody like could not play the game for some reason, something to do with they weren't able to click the buttons fast enough during QTEs or quick time events, and they had never considered that. So all of a sudden they added this new feature along with several others for accessibility. But I look at it's not always necessarily an accessibility thing. Often people may also want just a different experience, right? So I'm often a content tourist. I'll play games on easy mode. Simply so I can see everything that goes into the game that's behind it. I don't want to grind and spend all this time doing something. I want to see the material. So, not quite accessibility, but just opening it to more people and new experiences and things like that.
I think it's
So what you
important
guys
to
did here is smart.
give people those options and let them kind of experience it how they want. Like, put in a mode that says like this is how the developer intended the game to be played. But there's nothing wrong with having multiple difficulty levels or easing something like quick time event button presses. It's not 1986 anymore, and you don't have to make games like Track and Field. You can,
Yeah, exactly.
but that's not something that's going to appeal to everybody. And if you put those elements in your game, people might, be turned off by it, or maybe they won't be able to do it.
Yeah, well, with
So
track and field is brutally difficult too. If you want to work out, that's the game to play.
going
Although I
back to
imagine,
Konami again.
yeah. Oh, I mean, they just had like they were pumping awesome soundtracks all the time back in the day.
They were the masters. They really were.
So you have this game knocked out. What is next in the pipeline for you?
So we recently debuted a pre-alpha build. We put it on our YouTube page, which I think is just Neon Deity Games,
Okay.
for a Game Boy inspired top-down car combat game called Bruisin' Cruisers,
Bruisin' Cruisers.
which is taking some influence from games like Spy Hunter and Bump and Jump, and we're kind of trying to put our own spin on that genre because the overhead pixelated car combat genre is woefully underrepresented these days.
Yeah, definitely. It's like GTA, Grand Theft Auto 1 was definitely not the first game to do this, but right, GTA 1 was one of those games. Spy Hunter, did you mention that earlier? Yes, the Spy Hunter. I had that on the Master System, and that was like my first exposure to it. And I thought, this is incredible. But in there, you could take your motorcycle, drive into the back of like a large 18-wheeler or something, drop it into there, and you'd come out a moment later, and you'd suddenly have this like really strong souped up car to kind of blast people along the way.
Yeah, that's an awesome element. I don't think we're going to go that direction, but
Yeah.
that's such an inspired gameplay mechanic.
Oh yeah. So it's called Bruisin' Cruisers. So I got to see this the other day. I'm gonna see if I can find any type of oh here we go. Pre-alpha footage. So you folks are lucky you're gonna be able to see this right away in the background here. See if
Yeah,
I can raise
so
some of some volumes they can hear. Awesome soundtrack and sound effects, by the way.
thank you. It's all created in FamiTracker. The voice sample was recorded, bit crushed, and then run through FamiTracker.
Bit crush. Can you explain this term to myself and people listening?
So the old systems, when they would play an actual audio sample, they would have to, I guess they would just have to convert it to a format that the system would understand. But because they didn't have a lot of storage space,
they wouldn't actually store it on the card or hardware itself. It would just essentially be reading the sound format, right? Instead of actually like an MP3 or a WAV.
Exactly. So the FamiTracker, at least FamiTracker itself, I'm not sure what the system itself reads, but I believe it reads .dmcs, because you have to get a program to like convert them to that too. And it basically degrades the quality, and because the Nintendo could only play 1 second of 1 second samples at max, you had to kind of crush it all into one little file. So you
and by sample, a lot smaller. Can you describe what a sample is briefly?
Just a recorded piece of audio that the system didn't produce.
Right. So it might be like you say "get bruisin'" or your name,
right?
Or you know, actually, one of the more well-known ones probably the opening of Sonic. It says Sega.
Yep. Tecmo Bowl. They say touchdown.
Right. Man, that soundtrack was awesome too. Wait, was that Konami? I don't know.
Tecmo.
Oh, that's right. Duh. that's why I'm sipping my coffee, because I can't even keep track of this stuff. So this looks awesome. I guess you're doing this in Unity as well, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Like, the art style is great. It looks like you have some filters applied to it. Very, very simple color palette too. But like, it's distinct because it's not quite Game Boy, which obviously has that green hue. This is more like, I don't know. You're using like an 8-bit color palette.
So we're sticking to the Game Boy limitations, so like the four colors. And Garrett created a shader where we can switch the color palette on the fly. So we have a bunch of
colors loaded. I just noticed that. Perfect timing, because as soon as you said that, it actually switched over.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So the Game Boy color palette is in there, like the greens and the, well, greens, because it's really what it is. But we wanted to have a couple other ones, like maybe if you're underground, the color palette is blue because it's, you know, underground. And if you're underground and lava shows up, it turns red.
Yeah.
So stuff like that.
So kind of all over the place. This is a very, very clever idea. So how long have you been working on this now?
2 to 3 weeks, maybe 4-ish.
Oh, wow. You're not playing around. This is still pretty new.
We did a game jam version of this a long, long time ago, and we never finished it. We got the car moving, and we got some track on the road, or from road on the track. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we built a level, and we didn't get any of the AI in, and we ran out of time in the game jam. We're just like, oh, well, let's get back to this later, maybe someday. And I don't know. Like, I love Bump and Jump, and there hasn't been another game like it ever that I can think of. So I really kind of want
to pay
homage to it. That's an old arcade/NES game.
Bump and Jump. Hang tight.
This is kind of my way of making a game, I guess, that I want to play, which isn't necessarily the best way to develop, but sometimes you are afforded that opportunity.
Yeah. Or Data East. Man, they have not done anything in so long.
I think they may be defunct.
Yeah, definitely at this point. You know what? Every time I watch RoboCop, I think of them. Because if you watch RoboCop 2, there's like a scene where the kid's in the arcade kind of playing games.
Sure.
And it's all like Data East games that he's playing, and there's like big logos for it on the side. And then even better, the team who made the RoboCop game for NES and other platforms was Data East.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Like big marketing campaign. Yeah, wow, this is cool, this little game. It's like basically a little like cars kind of putting along. And it just keeps smashing into cars. I don't know why it's not going anywhere.
Are you watching the NES or the arcade version?
Now it's finally going. I'm watching the arcade. It's finally going now. It kind of looks like it slows down, then it speeds up. This is cool. And sort of like you guys are thinking outside the box with this.
Yeah, so we didn't want to make it like a complete ripoff. So with Bump and Jump, the whole thing is, you know, you're a car and you can bump into the other cars. And your ability is you can jump at will. But we didn't want to just, you know, we don't just want to take that mechanic. So we're putting in a bunch of different cars you can unlock. So the main car you see in the video on our page has a dash ability where it can like ram into the other cars. And we're going to have a car that can jump that you can unlock later. But we're tying it to an ability where you only have X amount of times to do it, and you have to pick up power ups to refill your meter.
Gotcha.
Whereas in bump and jump, you can just do it indefinitely.
Okay. I like what you guys are doing here. You're essentially going back, not necessarily just for this game, but even with Tsushima, is you're kind of taking old gameplay mechanics, making them new again, and accessible to a new audience.
I guess that's kind of what we've been doing when you break it down like that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, simplicity is key.
Yeah,
This is neat.
we just want to make games that we want to play, and a lot of people aren't making those games these days, so
Yeah, I know.
guess we got to make them ourselves.
And like AAA is just kind of getting out of hand in terms of cost of making some of these games and how long it takes. So like what are
It's
you
abs
looking at in terms of like development time for this game?
Oh, we did a plot out, and we're targeting 6 to 8 months, but it
Okay.
may end up being that when we complete it, we're going to hold on to it till the release date's right. Because that's another lesson we learned with Tsushima was do not release in late summer, early fall.
Late summer, early fall. Okay, or
Because
even
everything
early
comes
summer
out.
now. Yes. It's
Yeah.
like summer completely dies, right? You look at in the last 2 weeks we have Uncharted, Battleborn, Overwatch, Call of Duty just got, backwards compatibility, all these wildly popular games, and now you're gonna have nothing else for weeks or months. But then,
Yeah,
like I said,
so.
everyone's back for school and they want to play. Not they don't want to go to school, they want to play.
Yeah, and we released right into the Stormfront cloud that was Metal Gear Solid 5. So
Oh,
that
jeez.
was a mistake that we were, not happy about when we realized what we did, and we don't want to repeat that. Because there are
Not every.
months and there are moments in the calendar where, like, there is a lull where stuff isn't kind of coming out, and maybe you're not quite so buried.
So, like, are there any particular ones that stand out in mind to you?
What's that?
Like, if you're going to re-release again, like, when would be an ideal time frame for you?
Oh, geez. I mean, you got to look at the calendar and see what comes out when. But springtime is usually not a huge, huge
Yeah, I
market.
think you're right. It's
And
like
you
everyone
mentioned,
kind of gets it
like,
out in the holiday.
yep. And right in the doldrums of summer, that late June, July period. Once you start getting past July, you're starting to run into stuff like Madden.
And then like what? So it's crazy. I mean, I haven't played Madden in years, but there was just like a cult of people who are diehard about that game. But I suppose it's the same for a lot of genres. You have Call of Duty fans, there's tens of millions of them. You have League of Legends, which is massive, like 110,000, 110 million like active players. It is absurd.
That's a crazy amount of people. I can't even fathom that.
And the only reason I knew this was like I play some MOBAs, but I looked on Twitch and it's the number one game like by a mile, and it's just blowing everything else away. And then other games that come close for things like Minecraft is like top five or six. Call of Duty's up there. Counter-Strike Go is like number two or three. So have you like considered the rise of live streaming, like whether it's Twitch users or YouTube people? I've noticed in the last couple of years, especially of having missed PAX for 2 years and then or a year and then gone back this year. 2 years ago, there was like nothing with streaming at all. I go back a month ago and half of PAX is, live broadcasting content. So, have you considered any of that into either how you're marketing your games or how you're creating them and maybe implementing some sort of streaming feature?
Well, we're considering adding, and we haven't really got past the idea stage on this, but we might add some kind of daily run feature that will net you certain bonuses into the actual game itself for completing those challenges. Something like Binding of Isaac, which is also very popular for streaming. Those daily runs are key for something like that. I don't know how stream friendly an old style game like this will be, but maybe people really get into streaming those levels if we make them kind of unique and devious enough. For this game specifically, I guess that's about as far as we got in terms of ideas for that. I know Wayne streams his art creation a lot, so I'm not was he Twitch TV slash Wanyodos, and I think every couple of days, he's on there streaming some kind of pixel art creation or game playing. So, if anybody's interested in seeing our progress on that, that's one way to keep in touch with us.
Wanydos. That's Wanydos. So yeah, I mean, I notice even people creating their games, they'll often live stream them and the process behind it. That seems to be very popular too. Also, it's a good way of staying on track, you know, kind of being focused and consistent. I know that Rami Ishmael and I forgot the other gentleman he works with. I'm drawing a blank. Vlambeer.
Yeah.
They do it pretty consistently, but it's a lot of work. I mean, it's like a brain drain, and you're just sitting there like hyper focused on what you're doing the whole time. You don't want to say or do the wrong things.
For some people, it's good because it gives you a little bit of an accountability factor where you don't want to let down the people that are watching, and maybe you're kept more on track because every day you know you got to get on there and keep the schedule up, which is, you know, which is good if that's something you're into. I don't know if I'll ever get into streaming myself, but I respect the heck out of people that do it on a regular basis.
Yeah, it seems like a full-time gig.
It does. It's a full-time gig that's probably tough to get paid doing.
Yeah. I've been looking into this a lot lately, and it's a project. It costs some money to get started. And it definitely seems to be pretty time consuming for the people who are doing it. So, you know what? Now that we're coming towards a close here, I'm going to handle this the same way that I do every other show. It's actually been some time since I've done a show, March, April, May. It's been almost 2 months. I've just been like so slammed with work, unfortunately. So, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask you a question based on that the previous people who came on and asked. And actually, we had mentioned these fine folks before. So James and Michelle Silver were the last two who were on about 2 months ago. And you ready? The
sure.
question they had asked is, how would you deal with the panic of things going wrong now that it's out there in people's hands?
The game?
So, yes.
Whew. I guess you just kind of get on social media and whatever other outlets you have to discuss with people, let them know a fix is coming, and then, you know, work double time to get that fixed.
Okay. So kind of like help put out the fires quickly, like be reactive, things like that.
Yeah, because you're only as good as your reputation. And if you put out a game that's broken, obviously nobody thinks you did that on purpose.
People don't forget.
Yeah, but people don't forget. And they especially don't forget if you come on and A, communicate, and B, make good on your promise. Because you putting out a game is your promise to the players and people who buy it that you're giving them a product that works.
That's right.
So if it's on you to get that fixed. So I'm pretty sure that's what we would do.
Yeah, they're paying good money for it. They're, you know, hoping for the best. So yeah, absolutely, you're right.
And that's I'll say like the folks who made Slain. I don't know if you saw that one. It's a Castlevania inspired gothic 2D slash 'em up. They launched, and that game looked incredible, and it launched to all sorts of problems, and I felt super bad for them, but they got on, they owned up to it, and they've been working their tail off to get that game up to snuff. So
let's take a look. Okay, so Wolf Brew seems to be the team.
Yep.
Nice opening of their trailer. This thing takes entirely too long to get going. Wow, dude, this pixel art looks crazy. Oh, you know what? I remember reading about this game a year ago.
Yeah, so they launched and they had some problems. I think there were some problems with keyboard controls and there was some other stuff where people weren't happy with the performance. So they were just like, "We're really sorry. We're on it. We're fixing it. Thanks for sticking with us." And I think that's kind of what you need to do.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because I mean, you got to keep building that audience, keep growing, kind of learning as you're going along.
Yeah,
this looks great.
People will remember, like, hey, they fixed it last time. I have faith in them.
Right. Yep. And you really only get one chance to release, which I guess is probably why you have games like Mighty No. 9 taking forever to get out the door, you know?
That game is going to be a case study for years to come on,
I bet.
On what to do and what not to do, I think.
It's
it may launch and be really successful.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to expect at this point because that trailer they just put out today has
new trailer.
And it has a very strange voiceover on it.
Yeah.
And it's I'm just gonna go ahead and say it on the record. It's pretty tone deaf.
Man.
So 5 days ago, 1 month ago. Like they have no idea who they're selling this game to right now.
Mighty No. 9. So there's gotta be news. Oh wow. Yeah, Kotaku. Mighty No. 9's marketing is embarrassing to everyone.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't make anybody feel good. When you watch the trailer after we're off the show, though, and,
I'm watching it right now. So talk to me. What the hell? This doesn't look like the character that was originally pitched. He looks like a little kid now.
There's a lot of debate in the community about the direction they took things. The concept art looked a lot different than the actual game, but of course it's concept art, so it's not always going to look like the game. Yeah,
that's fair.
It's tough, man. It's
even the voiceover's like, "Hey, you."
Yeah, it's really condescending and tries to be too cool and sell itself, and it gets insulting to people at some points.
Wow, and even like when it stopped for a second and kind of looked at Beck, he's like a little kid. Like this is, I think we all thought this was gonna be like a spiritual successor to Mega Man, and that's just not what it seems to be at this point.
It's definitely not how they're marketing it.
So and I think what took them so long?
There's a
long
line in the trailer where he says, "It's going to make you cry like an anime fan on prom night."
Oh my god!
And it's like, I mean, maybe you're trying to grab.
Yeah,
well,
I just got to that scene. Yeah.
So like, but like, isn't the game gonna have an anime? Isn't there an anime in planning for this character?
Yeah.
So, kind of biting the hand that feeds you at that point.
I know. June 21st. We'll see. I just got my like the second letter in the mail from them saying, "Oh, select the platform you want it to come out on."
Oh, did you back it?
Yes, unfortunately. Nice, you don't back games on Kickstarter anymore.
So even I backed it too, and then I was like, "Oh, they got $3 million. I think they're going to be okay. I'm going to save a little money, just pick it up when it comes out." So I pulled my pledge out, and I'm so glad I did, because I watch everybody who backed it. You know, they're all, "Is this game ever going to come out? I'm so mad right now. I want my money back." And I don't ever have to worry about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're doing. And now that the trailer is actually done, it's like a still. And it looks like a early PS2 game, I guess. Like, and it made Unreal Engine 3, so what were they doing?
I can't figure it out. It's a travesty.
Man, this is a shame, because I think everyone was looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was real excited. Mega Man is, you know, one of those games, I think, for a lot of us at our age, especially, you know, we grew up playing that, and the more of them, the better.
Inafune, do not let us down, man.
We'll see. Anyway. I'm holding out hope that he completed it properly.
Yeah.
And that just the marketing is bad.
They're trying to be positive here. No more negativity. Come on.
Yeah.
So now we're coming to a conclusion. We asked you last week's question. What is your question for the next developer I will have on the show?
If you could bring back any one classic video game system, which one and why?
So if you could bring back any classic video game system, which one would it be and why? I think you know which one I'm going to choose, but we'll save it for the next week then.
Yeah, I have an idea.
I'm a little of a fanboy in One Direction, but that's neither here nor there.
It's a good system to be a fan of.
I know. Although one of these days I swear to God, I'll complete an FMV game of my own. I did that Night Trap port, got pretty far, so we'll see.
You're on the right path.
Yeah. All right, well, Anthony, man, it was awesome, awesome to get you on here again. We did so many podcasts together. Actually, all together, the Armless Octopus staff did, I think, 120, so we had some experience doing these things. But it was great to get you again here. I think the last time I saw you was not GDC, PAX Prime, Seattle.
I think so.
I went to like one of your launch parties. That was right.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, you guys had like quite the team going on over there, representing Buffalo well.
We're doing what we can.
Yeah. All right. So after your next game is released, we'll have to get you back on so you can talk more about that process too.
Yeah, I'd love to be on again. Thanks for having
me. Awesome. Thanks for hopping on. I will see you later. Oh, actually, you know what? Wait, sorry, I forgot real quick. See, this is what happens when I don't do this after a while. Where can people find out about you, your games, maybe your Twitter, what the deal is?
Sure. I'm Hang On Get Ready on Twitter. We have a Tumblr page. I think it's just leondeity.com. And I think at ShootShimi is our actual account for the team.
How do you spell that?
ShutShimi.
Wonderful. That's what I like to hear.